This is the Draft Prospect Review Podcast from Patriots.com.
With the 22nd pick, the New England Patriots select.
Now, here to
preview the prospect,
the writers of PFW.
Wednesday, March 3rd, here at Gillette Stadium, and the PFW boys are in the house for our first draft podcast review, where we have, of course,
preview
all the draft prospects for the 2010 season. Andy Hart, Eric Scalavino, the kings of the combine, at least that's what they tell me. Paul Perillo, I have no responsibilities here whatsoever, so I am just going to open up our draft season right now. We're going to get into our positional breakdowns as the weeks go forward. You know,
I resign.
Our listeners know Wednesdays is where to be in the pre-draft process. This is where we have draft podcasts every week. This is the first one. We're going to give you a nice overview of the combine. And overall, I just want you guys to start off here, just overall impressions of what you you went through over the last 5 or 6 days. 17 days, according to Andy.
What we went through was pure hell and nonstop work.
It's fun, though.
Crawling through muddy trenches. The 500 yards of the most vile
tundra of Indianapolis.
I'm just glad you guys made it through alive. I was really worried about you for a while.
You know.
But pluggers. Seriously, your overall impressions of what plugged. Everybody is describing as a very deep and talented draft class.
That's the impression I got. I think this is one of the better, at least at the very top, I think it's one of the better draft classes we've seen. And I think in the middle, there's a lot more, there's some more depth at certain positions than there has been in previous years.
Yeah, everybody, it's unanimous. It's a great draft. It's deep, it's top heavy, it's everything. Charlie Casserly, best first round he's seen since 1983. A lot of those type of comments. I don't know the talent. I mean, we haven't watched a lot of tape yet.
That's true. You don't know
But
talent.
The reaction I came away with is that it's the safest draft near the top. I thought they're, you know, the turd.
Best character guys at the top.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, likes to keep track of those types of players. I don't think there's a lot of turds in the top prospects. I think, you know, the quarterbacks, I think, are all pretty safe. Not in terms of playing ability, but I'm saying in terms
character
of
issues.
Not being a problem, not going out and going all Ryan Leaf on you. I think certainly both defensive tackles that are near the top of the draft are going to be consummate professionals. Don't know whether they'll be worthy of the first, second, or third pick in terms of playing and dominating a game. But I think when you put a lot of money invested in them, you're not going to regret it. You're not going to be trying to recoup signing bonus 3 years down the road because the guy's suspended or in trouble. I think a lot of those elite guys, a couple that I wouldn't necessarily include, one would be Dez Bryant,
clearly.
Is a bit of a question mark, is the top wide receiver on the board. Even Sergio Kindle, who is by all accounts or by a lot of accounts, best outside linebacker, conversion, 3-4 guy, I came away a little bit underimpressed with. But for the most part, I think some of the elite guys are well-trained, well-versed, and looking to be professionals at the next level.
And it's funny that the depth issue comes up. A lot of times we say that because so many juniors come out early and enter a draft. This year, in some cases, particularly a quarterback, it's deep because guys didn't come out early, and you have a lot of four-year starters and seniors who came out after their entire college career. So there's a good mix of both, you know, older guys and guys who are maybe a little bit of a project. Guys like, you know, Joe Hayden, who's considered the best cornerback in the draft, has really only played cornerback for 3 years. He was a quarterback and was recruited as a quarterback coming out of high school, made the switch because that's where he was most needed for the Gators. And you have guys like Jason Pierre-Paul, or as Andy likes to call him, Juan Pierre-Paul.
Plays a little center field in the offseason.
Who's really only had 1 year of major college football experience, and yet he's
barely a year.
Yeah, and he's talked about as being a potential first-round pick. So,
but on the other side, George Selvey, who's obviously been a prospect since he had 14 sacks as a sophomore, gets forgotten about. So Eric's right. The difference between the polished 4-year, 5-year type players, or 6-year if you're Jordan Shipley,
right?
7 years, probably a 7-year guy in there somewhere, versus some of these unknown freaks like Pierre-Paul.
Eric, I know you had the same impressions overall as Andy, with the talent and the depth. What stood out, you know, Andy mentioned a couple of guys that were sort of negative on the radar in terms of their impressions. And that's all you get because you're not watching anybody play. You're just watching them sort of, quote unquote, perform, for a lack of a better word, in front of the media. And I think that is an important aspect. And
well, it's virtually identical to what the teams do. Generally, the big name players do somewhere within the range of 15 to 20 minutes at the podium. And the teams get 15 minutes with them. And the teams are asking, that car accident you were in last summer,
What happened?
What happened? And they're reading what he says, how he says it, where his eyes go.
And they already know the answer.
Right.
In most cases.
And they're
getting
a vibe, or is the guy a turd, or is he, you know, owning, like, LeGarrette Blount. I thought he owned up to it. I thought his best quote was, in life you're going to come into these situations where you can react two ways. The way I did or the right way. To me, that tells
me good answer.
I effed up.
Sure.
And I'm ready to man up to it, and sure. I'm happy I'm here to have an opportunity to pursue football when maybe
I thought
6 months ago I wasn't going to get that opportunity.
Yeah, it's neither here nor there at this point, but I thought he was too harshly dealt with in the first place. I thought there were certainly extenuating circumstances that you could understand why he reacted the way he did. Suspend him, yes, but suspend him for 7-8 games the way he was, I thought was a little harsh.
Well,
but
I
that's
think
neither here nor there.
For him, the difference was not the punch. I think the punch was one aspect of it. The trying to attack fans in the crowd was taking it to a 10th level above that. Anybody can throw a punch on the field.
Right.
It's happened 1,000 times in sports. But when you try to attack fans, now you're getting into Conseco Field, Palace at Auburn Hills, where riots take place. Mm-hmm. So there's two different issues there.
Eric, I wanted to get your impressions on, you know, who was some. We all know who the top end talent is, and a lot of those names have already been mentioned, but who matched that talent with a very impressive performance at the podium?
Well, but before I get to that, real quick, to follow up what Andy said.
Are you a politician who's going to answer a different question?
No, I'm going to answer both. But
am I in charge of this? Or you guys put me in charge.
Well,
what happened?
Well, you did ask me a question before that I didn't get to answer because Andy kind of answered for me.
He
but
does.
He was saying before that the teams basically only have the same amount of time to talk to these players as we do, and they're asking basically the same sort of character questions that we're asking them, and in some cases the players come and talk to us after they've talked to teams. Sometimes they come to us before they've talked to teams because one of the questions we give them is, you know, who have you talked to at the combine? And they say, oh, I don't know, I have about 15 interviews scheduled for tonight. Other players have already talked to some of these teams before they talk to us. And one player in particular who stood out on the negative side was Oklahoma State cornerback Parrish Cox, who had a little bit of a character issue during.
Cox
stood out,
did he?
Yeah, right.
Stand up for himself?
He was suspended for driving with a suspended license and speeding earlier in the season, and then at the bowl game, a Cotton Bowl, he broke curfew not once but twice. And so teams were asking him about these two issues, and he used the term harassed to describe how he was being questioned by these teams. You know, they were harassing me about these things. I don't think that's necessarily the kind of word you want to use when you're talking about a job interview and people asking legitimate questions about your past. But anyway, to your other question about...
What was the question?
some of the guys who matched up both as top-tier blue-chip players and who also matched up as far as their interviews went. Consensus, the best interview I think most of us have ever seen was Myron Roll, the safety from Florida State, who was also
the... And is this
what
you say, no,
Rhodes
McCoy
scholar.
Was better?
McCoy was better, so.
Yeah.
I mean, but not even a consensus on the PFW members in attendance, but.
No, but most people who.
Eric can mislead the listeners.
Most people who heard him and McCoy and Dominican Sue were all. Sam Bradford, the quarterback from Oklahoma. Those are all guys who are considered, maybe not in Roll's case. He might be more of a second or third round guy. But as far as the top end guys at the tackles, a couple of the quarterbacks, they all came across, in my opinion, as legit guys. I know Andy's not too fond of Tim Tebow, not necessarily Tim Tebow the player, but the image of Tim Tebow.
Tim Tebow the self-promoter.
But I thought he handled himself very well with the media.
We're all better people for having been there in Indy.
Any other any off-the-radar kind of guys that maybe you didn't know a lot about before you got down there that really blew you away? Both of you guys, I suppose.
Blown away by off-the-radar guys. Well, a guy who you know was on my radar, who I fell more in love with.
I know it's hard to get a guy
James
off your
Starks,
radar.
Because I go with a big board. I'm like Mel Kiper. I got a big board going in. Now
you don't
guys
have
can
to,
rise
you don't have to do the,
fall.
The Mike Mayock and look down at your notes when there's a guy that you know isn't slated to go in the top 15 pick.
I think you see all these guys that, for some reason, they have injuries or they have these concerns. You know, the whole tight end class virtually is banged up. Or a guy like James Starks, 1,300 yards as a running back as a junior, can't play as a senior. He's projected as like this sixth-round pick, maybe a free agent. And then they say, oh, my God, the guy can walk. His arms are still attached. He can bench press. Well, should we go back and look at the guy who rushed for 1,300 yards and caught X number of passes 2 years ago? So as much as they downplay this combine, it's like as soon as they see that the guy's still alive and with their own visual eyes is still a candidate physically,
right.
they start to rise up. So I think some of those guys coming back, you know, Best goes out and runs a real fast 40 time, faster than I think people expected.
Did Gresham do anything, the kid from Oklahoma?
I
don't know.
He might have benched. I don't know if he ran. I don't think he ran, but.
But a lot of those guys, I think, get back into this, and you're kind of surprised that they were out of it. Because talent-wise, they should be in the mix. And unless it's an injury that's going to, I mean, in modern medicine, you come back from injuries all the time.
Right.
So, I mean, Willis McGahee, if he can blow his knee out like that and be drafted 23rd or whatever it was by the Buffalo Bills,
right,
you can come back from a lot. If the guy has the talent, the ability, the mental makeup, all the other things you're looking for, and I think those are some of the guys that I find interesting at the combine that kind of jump back up.
I'll give you two guys at two positions that I think New England might be targeting in this draft.
Hunter.
Why does he keep going off the board? I didn't ask that question.
Because he's a politician.
Go ahead.
You asked for two guys
that were off the radar. I don't care about the Patriots' interest yet. That was coming. I was working to that.
Okay.
Now I'm off my script. I'm like Mayock.
All right. I was going to give you both at the same time, if that's okay. But cornerback and tight end. I thought there were a couple of players who stood out. While Andy giggles off in the corner like a little schoolgirl, at tight end, Nate Byam from Pittsburgh, who, contrary to some of the other players at his position who like to brag about how great a pass catcher they are, this guy was raved about by scouts, he said, for his blocking ability, and he attributed that to his head coach, Dave Wanstead, who's an NFL, former NFL head coach and assistant. And the scouts were telling him, he said, that they were very impressed by his NFL style or NFL caliber blocking ability at the college level. The one area where he said he needed to improve was route running, but again, as far as catching the ball, he says he was lauded for being able to catch the ball with his hands. And so I think he has a step up on some of the other tight ends in this draft just based on the fact that he already knows how to block and he can catch. Maybe just have to tweak his route running a little bit. I think he's a potential guy who could stand out. The other one was a guy from a small school, a cornerback. His parents are from Ghana, so his name is a little tricky. It's Akwasi Owusu-Ansa. And that's a hyphenated last name there. He's from a Division II school.
Excuse me. Is that how you would pronounce it?
No, that's how he pronounced it.
Oh, okay.
That's how pronounced it.
I just wanted to clarify.
Quaz, he said for short, is what his friends call him.
Is he the Ghanaian American?
He's a Ghanaian American. That's right.
I caught that one on the blog.
6 feet, 205. He's got good size for a cornerback. He's a special teams guy. Scored some touchdowns, returning kicks and punts. Loves press coverage, likes being physical. So I think he's the kind of cornerback that we've sort of longed for here for a while, maybe since the days of Ty Lowe's, both physical and can press and even has special teams ability. And he's a little bit of a sleeper, I think, because the last few years, cornerbacks from smaller schools have sort of been able to make an impact in the NFL. I think he's a guy worth watching.
You're right about that. What school is he from?
Indiana University of Pennsylvania.
I'll give you a couple names, not necessarily sleepers, but one I think is an interesting one is Brandon Spikes, inside linebacker, Florida. I thought he has an edge about him that would fit nicely on this team in the lack of leadership role. He's a guy that was the centerpiece, literally and figuratively, of that Florida defense, the leader of it, you know, that kind of thing.
Has the requisite off-the-field stuff that Patriots would be interested in.
Yeah, you know, it happens. You poke a something here and there, yeah, it happens. But as a
kid,
if he's
kid
in the second round, if, you know, he's a 1/2, theoretically.
Very good player.
Potential second-round pick to put in there next to Mayo if you get maybe your pass rusher in the first round. The safeties, I forgot to touch on Eric Berry. I did want to include him in that group of...
Very good.
Yes.
Not just very good, but solid prospects. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to... If he fails, okay, maybe he's not Ed Reed. He compares himself to Ed Reed. Everybody else does. Maybe he's not Ed Reed, but I don't think he's going to be a problem. I think you'll have a solid safety at worst that you're paying a little bit too much because maybe you drafted him a little too high. There was a... Larry Asante, I was very impressed with. Nebraska safety, who I would look to as a potential Patriot.
No interest.
Second,
play
third
the
round pick.
We were just lamenting the fact that his first name wasn't Samuel, because that would have been funnier.
Sam Asante, get it?
I got it. I got
Didn't
it.
Didn't necessarily care for it, though.
We're going to have, obviously, a whole lot more to talk about in the coming weeks, right up until the April 22nd?
Yes.
Ron
Burgundy?
April
22nd through 24th.
Yeah. Which is a Thursday night this year, so we will come to you right up until the night before the draft
yeah.
with these Draft Podcast Reviews, where we obviously
preview
the prospects. So this is just a little base for you. Andy and Eric back from the combine, giving you
the prospect.
A lot of their insight to what went on in Indy. We're going to get into next week. We'll start off with the positions. Is that
sure.
the way we're going to do this? Or are we going to
sure, we can,
have another
sure.
sort of overview until we can get some video?
Because
we have not gotten any video yet.
So be low.
Maybe by next week we will. So we'll hold
out
some hope.
Hopefully we'll be able to do that. And if not, we'll probably start off with quarterbacks, so we all know a little bit more about without necessarily.
We know there's one guy.
Yeah.
And one guy only.
Sam Bradford.
It's all about Peyton Manning.
It's all about Sam Bradford for Andy. It's about Peyton Manning, P-A-Y-T-O-N, as you put on the blog one day.
Well, he can run a little, so he's got that Walter Payton-like, and he's also kind of like Manning.
All right. So that's great stuff from Andy and Eric. And for once, they actually said they worked hard and seemingly did. So we'll get into
doing
the rest.
It the past 3 or 4 years.
We'll get to the rest of the draft as we go. For now, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Draft Podcast Review. Peace out.
That's the cue for the music.
Preview the prospect.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from Patriots.com. Log on anytime for more news and more podcasts from your favorite team and Patriots.com.